This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola. Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck wasn't that
his Bismarck.
Bismarck. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And with me, as always, my PIC, who feels like it's been a decade since we last spoke, Scott Criscola. How are you?
I am well, as always, JR. Good to be with you, as always. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 379 of The Mothership. You know, it's weird. It's the same two-week... Well, I guess this instance was only, what, extra 3 days from the usual 2 weeks. But yeah, it does seem like it. But it's good to be back, and welcome, Place Be Nation. The sweltering dog days of August have begun. Good weekend for you, sir?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I'm got some busy times coming up, but I'm ready for football, I think. So, but
really?
Yeah, I am.
It's a first place.
I am. I know. Well, I can watch both, but...
Oh, I know, but sometimes, you know, priorities, you know. Yeah. I'm usually ready for football by the 4th of July, so yeah,
this is new to you.
Uncharted waters for me, so...
I know how to coast to September, but I am... Yes, I am ready for football, ready for SummerSlam coming up in a couple weeks. We'll be,
yes.
Well, I can't believe it's already, what, is it 2 weeks, 3 weeks from yesterday?
3 weeks from yesterday, yeah.
Coming fast. We'll be there in Brooklyn. Oh. So tonight we're talking Armageddon 2004, but obviously before we get to that, we wanted to take some time, talk about the life and career of the now late, great Roddy Piper. Passed away on Friday. Very sad news when it was broken in our little chat group and then started to spread and really picked up steam. And it's surreal coming off of Dusty just passing away a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't really expect it. And Piper's a weird one. He's younger than you would maybe think. He's only 61.
Yeah.
Of course, he started very, very young. And we had just seen him on Legends House. He's been on TV a lot. So it was similar to Dusty, where he's still pretty active. You know, we've had guys that have passed away that were not really on TV or, you know, and it's sad. But
right.
When you have a guy that's, I would consider Piper to be, what, like 25% semi-active? You know what I mean? Where he's,
right.
And I don't mean in the ring, just on TV, making appearances at the Hall of Fame, shows up for skits. You know, he's on. He's in our lives still. So that made it a little bit tougher to swallow, which it always does when you're still seeing them. And of course, tonight on Raw, they open with the 10 bell salute, and they had the video package actually open the show, which they rarely do.
Mm.
And it was really well done. So, Roddy Piper, we're not going to go through his career because I can already tell you there's an Exile on Bad Street coming this week.
Mm-hmm.
It may be up by the time you're listening to this with Chris Zellner and the gang. And I'm sure, I mean, they went, 4 hours and 10 minutes on Dusty Rhodes or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll have an in-depth review of Piper's career. So we're not going to do that here tonight for you. We're just going to talk about our memories, our favorite moments and matches of Piper.
Mm-hmm.
So Scott, you obviously, you were introduced to him first. And so why don't you tell me about that?
Yes.
Was it in his NWA days? Was it WWF? When did you first become aware of Roddy Piper?
Oh, definitely the first time I knew him live was was mid-1984. I didn't see him in NWA till way after the fact. In fact, it was probably like 80. It was like 86 when I rented that. I don't know if you remember this tape, JR. Maybe some of our listeners do. There was a PWI did a I guess you can call it a mixtape called Lords of the Ring, and yes. I think Gordon Solie hosted it. And it had the, which is one of my favorite matches of all time, which is him and Valentine in the dog collar match from Starrcade 83. So I saw that after the fact. But the first Piper I saw was mid to late 84, the pits. Obviously, the coconut to the head of Jimmy Snuka, which is an iconic moment in the history of this business. And, of course, the first Piper's pit, which is one I always goof with on our threads and everything, and I post a picture of it on Facebook, with the iconic Frankie Williams from Columbus, Ohio, which I didn't realize until D'Amato told me that he's dead too, so it kind of sucks.
But he didn't get quite the fanfare.
No, he didn't get a 10-bell salute. Maybe at the pizza place he did. But the first time I really got into Piper was the War to Settle the Score, the MSG house show preceding mm-hmm. WrestleMania 1. And this is, to me, one of the greatest moments in the history of anything. I mean, to have that kind of heat, to fire up, I know it's kayfabe, but regardless, to fire up a crowd so bad mm-hmm. that you got to have the cops surround the ring, you did your job. And, to have everybody, like, still love him just as much as they did T and Hogan at that moment, just boggles the mind. So I was following Piper very closely throughout that, his whole WWF run, to when he shaved, to that, I guess you can say, infamous moment now. Boy, he towed the line of controversy, really, during his WWF run mm-hmm. that I don't know if he'd be able to do now from when he, mm-mm. you know, whipped Mr. T with the belt to when he shaved Haiti Kid's head. Just crazy shit. Just crazy. And I remember the moment at WrestleMania 3, you know, when he went off the sunset after shaving Adrian Adonis' head and then not seeing him for a while. But, yeah, my first taste of Piper was probably mid to late 84. When Orndorff first got there and the TNTs, when they used to try to like hoodwink the doctor with Orton's broken arm and everything. That was probably my first taste of Piper.
So mine obviously was early 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know him as a heel for
right.
a while, ever really.
Yeah.
Until I went back and watched his stuff, because to me, he was always just, you know, face Roddy Piper, black and white face paint, feudal with Bad News Brown. He was, you know, pretty active throughout 90 on and off, became a commentator, took over Jesse Ventura. So that's really the first Piper I was introduced to. So I knew of him because he was one of the few guys I feel like they actually referenced his past a little bit. They'd always kind of mention how he was, he was a fan favorite, but kind of a bad guy, you know. They didn't hide that.
Right.
So I got to know him quickly. And then, of course, I rented a bunch of tapes and I learned who he was. And really one of the first things I really remember about him is the Piper's Pit at WrestleMania 5 with Morton Downey Jr., because I rented WrestleMania 5 a lot. It was one of the handful of tapes that was long, so it was worth renting, you know, at 4 hours or whatever. It gave you a lot of bang for your buck. So
yeah, exactly.
I had seen that pit quite a few times with Morton Downey and Brother Love. So that was one of the first like real pits I ever saw, was that one. And the one at, and then you'd catch up and see the other ones leading into WrestleMania 3, obviously, and whatnot. My favorite, and we've talked about this before, so we won't belabor the point, but the Coliseum home video, of course, the Roddy Piper one from the mid-80s, is, to me, one of the best Coliseum videos ever released, and it aired on 24/7 back in the day. I'm sure you can find it online somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic, fantastic tape. It's got the whole Halloween stuff from the Halloween Saturday Night's main event.
Yes.
It's got, it chronicles this whole feud with Snuka and the Tonga Kid, and just really good stuff, and the crowd heat is out of control. It's got the one where Andre comes out with his head all bandaged up from getting busted open.
Mm-hmm.
And a really, really fun tape. One of my favorite Coliseum videos of all time. So that I recommend going to check out if you've never seen it. A lot of fun, and really catches you up on Piper's, I don't say forgotten stuff, but the stuff that you may not jump to the front of your head because it happens all pre-Hogan.
Right.
You know, the Snuka feud and everything was just immensely hot. So if you haven't checked that out, it's a good little primer for you.
Yes.
You know, and then, of course, he disappeared. He had the feud with Flair. Went into 92, had the awesome match with Bret Hart at WrestleMania 8, well known as one of his best matches, if not his best match in WWF history, in his WWF career, I should say. Helped reestablish Bret Hart. To me, that's the match, and we've talked about this too, the match that really takes him Brett from a guy that is a great worker, great Intercontinental champion, and beating Roddy Piper clean in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania kind of legitimized him to move on. And then by SummerSlam, we see him like carrying the Bulldog, you know. So it's that's kind of the match that established him as a top tier guy,
right?
In my mind, even before he was world champion. And you know, I'll ask you this: do you think he could have been world champion if he hadn't had a win like that in his under his belt? I mean, I guess he could have, but would it have felt as strong?
Oh, I don't think so. They may have thought of somebody else. Obviously, for those that know, Flair had to drop it. He had the vertigo issue. So he had to drop the belt anyway. I don't know who else. I mean, give it back to Savage, I suppose, at that moment.
Tito is along another
rumor. Yes. you know, I don't know. It would have been...
Flair might have just kept it. I mean,
or Flair would have kept it and then would have had to just kind of, you know, dawdle with it while he got better. But clearly, that the win at WrestleMania 8 legitimize Brett, number one, because he is a great worker, number two, because you saw something out of Piper that you had never seen before, which was legitimately good work rate and in-ring general, which because of the way his feuds were leading up to that point, he never really had to wrestle like that. He was a chicken shit heel, or he was a comedic baby face picking on another annoying heel like the Mountie or something,
right?
So that moment, I think that match, I think established both guys. So and I think Piper was a longtime Brett fan because obviously he had a lot of respect for Stu. So
they grew up together, making bologna sandwiches, and
that's right,
you know, tying their shoes.
Two ovens in the kitchen. Hey, Piper, you want some more bologna?
And of course we can back up a couple months. His win over the Mountie at the Rumble,
yes.
A tremendous moment, one of the biggest pops of that era. Just massive when he wins the Intercontinental title, and of course the tease where he comes out in the Rumble and they start talking about can he win both titles in one night. And the showdown with Flair in the Rumble. So great night for him there. And then he would leave for a bit, played the bagpipes at SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he came back until WrestleMania 10, right?
When yeah, 94.
He's a special referee at WrestleMania 10, fights Lawler in the match of King of the Ring, mm-hmm. spot shot in 95, and then he's a commissioner, president in 96, you know, great feud with Goldust in early 96, leading into WrestleMania 12, and then he'd, of course, jumped to WCW. So his WWF run to that point, obviously, you know, legendary, immediately one of the top, most memorable characters. Like, I think everyone knows if you say Rowdy Roddy Piper, they know immediately who you're talking about. They know he's a wrestler, and they have an idea that he wore a kilt, bagpipes. Like, I think you at least get the basics if you mention his name to somebody.
Right.
A lot of, you know, crossover work, too. Obviously, he was in a lot of films. You know, Bubblegum and Kicking Ass, one of his most famous lines. So,
that's right.
A big crossover star for the company as well, not just a,
yes.
a wrestler. Yep. I thought he was a you know, good get for WCW in 96, as tough as it was as a fan at the time, seeing him when he showed up at, was it Halloween Havoc he came out at the end? I think it was.
Yes, it was Halloween Havoc. It was right. after Hogan beat
Savage.
Yes.
Yeah. So Piper comes out and confronts him. They have the big match at Starrcade. And on paper, that's one that you think, ugh, Hogan and Piper 96, how good can it be? You know, headlining Starrcade, is it like Hogan and Beefcake? Is it just? But it was actually a really fun match.
It was a fun match.
They
I agree.
Worked hard, had a lot of good heat, and Piper wins, and they do the thing where it was non-title, but they never really said it was non-title. They just never said it wasn't for the title.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a match.
That pissed some people off. And then, of course, 97, Savage cost them, and then we're off and running from there. So it's WCW run up and down. You know, still, he was still entertaining it most of the time. Overall, some of the stuff they had him doing was a little shaky, and then they had a cage match in 97, the age in the cage.
So yes.
Jim Cornette, whoever called it, Jim Ross.
Yes. You know, the other problem with Piper was it was just, well, let me rephrase that. Not him, but the booking, of course, was that they had like that core of old guys pretty much late 98 into 99, and you had like Flair, Hogan, Piper all like facing each other.
Yeah.
In some rotation for like five straight pay-per-views in the spring of 99.
And then
it
feud
was
with Brett a
dreadful.
Bit, too. They had that like tag feud. It was Hogan and Brett against Piper and Savage.
Yep.
I think, was that the Bash they had that? It was one of the shows in 98. Actually, I saw that. It was a dark match at the Nitro I went to in May of 98.
98.
It was one of them. I'm pretty sure
yeah.
it was Great American Bash, I think.
Yeah. Because Bash the Beach is the Karl Malone, right? No, that was 97. No, that was 98, yeah.
Yeah, 98 was Rodman Malone.
Or was 98? Yeah, 98 was Karl Malone because 99 was the other way around. I always get confused which Bash the Beach had Karl Malone and which Bash the Beach had Jay Leno. I always get confused on those.
97 was
Malone. Karl Malone.
Yeah, 98 okay. was Leno.
It was Leno, okay.
But anyway, so it was 98 when they had that tag feud, and then Piper did all the commissioner stuff there with Flair and everything.
Yeah. And then Flair turned. Flair and Piper were feuding, and then at the end of the match, that was the annoying thing. I forgot. I don't know if it was Slamboree 99 or Uncensored, one of those crappy Spring 99 pay-per-views. Flair and Piper have a match, and then at the end of the match, Piper turns on Buff Bagwell, and Flair and Piper leave together. Like, it made no sense whatsoever. It's like utterly ridiculous. Having Piper there was fun, and you know he liked working with Flair, and they were buddies and everything. But they let some of those feuds just stretch way too long. But for those that have not watched, I want to piggyback what JR said. I would definitely watch, because you don't want to be one of those people, and you and I have talked about this ad nauseum since we started the show in 2011. Never take anybody's word for anything in terms of matches. We just recommend. Other people want to, you know, ingrain it in you. But you're probably thinking to yourself, that Starrcade 96 match, oh, that thing must be utter trash. Watch it.
Yeah, no,
and at the end, you'll think very differently. Now, anything after like 97, your opinion may change.
Well, then
a little.
At one point, right, he wins the U.S. title, and he loses Scott Hall or whatever that match
was. That was a big, you know, he was drunk or whatever. Scott Hall had those issues. Yeah,
and then of course he was the referee where they redid Montreal with Bret and Goldberg, that whole shit.
Yeah, that whole mess.
Russo stuff. So then he leaves. He leaves WCW in early 2000. Of course, he would rejoin WWF in 2003 with the awesome surprise run at WrestleMania 19.
Yes.
Talk about that with when Mark Clair was on. We talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry, I've talked about it. My story, Mark Clair, where he predicted it, and I was shocked because remember he was on the little preview that they did. Was it Confidential? Whatever. Piper talked.
Yes.
Clair predicted that he was going to show up at Mania. I couldn't believe when he showed up in the. Mm. He had the black robe on. He pelts Hogan with the chair. Has the heel run, which is really cool. Having
the pipe.
Back. And he was with Sean O'Hare.
Was it a pipe?
Huh?
Was it a pipe?
Was it a pipe? What did I say? The chair? Yeah.
Chair.
You're right. Lead pipe.
It's a pipe, right? That's all right. I just want to make sure.
I thought you were going all dug in at Legends House and calling him Pipe.
Hey, Pipe. I'm lonely. Call me.
So a great heel turn there and a great fun little run with Sean O'Hare. You can argue if he helped or hurt O'Hare, but they did the coconut thing again. Then they had a freaking match with Mr. America Judgment Day. And then... just when he was starting to, you know, get back in the flow of things, he goes on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel and just discusses all the ins and outs on the dark side of wrestling. Talks about drugs he used and kind of, you know, trashes WWF a little bit, saying, whatever he got into. And then they ended up firing him because of it.
Yes.
Piper blamed HBO later, saying they took it out of context. Did a little run in TNA, came back in 05, and that was pretty much, you know, he never left again.
Mm.
For the most part, here and there he'd pop in and out, but he had the run with Flair and where they won the tag titles. If you remember, that actually ended up in a way saving his life, because remember he hurt his leg and they ended up, that's how they found the cancer.
Yep.
So he got, you know, cleaned up from that, and then he would be on and off, wrestled at WrestleMania 25 against Chris Jericho along with Snuka and Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
Had that great, you know, a couple great appearances on Raw. Remember he's the one in, it was at MSG where he was trying to, was it end of 10? What did he do on MSG? Remember he had the thing with Cena? It was the end of 11. He was with he had Cena.
End of 11 because it was leading up to the Rock stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
No, but there was another one that he was in. What did he do in MSG? It was the end of, because I was still reviewing him for the board. It was either end of 09 or 10.
Mm.
He did he was on a Piper Spit at MSG and he did something cool. I don't remember what the heck it was, but anyway, so he's done Pit since then. He's had some really good ones. And of course, was a Legends House to has his podcast, blah, blah, blah. Nickname lent to Ronda Rousey, and it was kind of fitting. She fought the next day after he passed away, dedicated the fight to him, and then destroyed her opponent.
Shit out of what's her name, yeah.
Correa.
It was different, and it was funny. You almost think that she channeled Piper, because normally she dropped, you know, she snaps the armbar on in about 16 seconds, and, you know, the girl's toast. Not this one. This one, she takes her down and then just pummels the shit out of her for about 9 seconds until they call the bell. Very un-Rousey-like finish to that match. But
yeah, she just pummeled her.
Beat her up. So it kind of fit.
Cool moment. She gave a shout-out to him after the fight, which was neat, too. So, again, sad, shocking news. It's cool that we get to see him on Legends House for an extended run again. One last time he was kind of with us.
He was awesome. Bizarre.
Did this one surprise you more than Dusty?
Yeah, because, well, they were both
Dusty to me looked more ill. Like, I was surprised, but then I thought about it. Like, well, you know, he's been looking a little thin. He's a little bit older. He's kind of had a rougher life. And I know Piper's had a rough life, but he seemed much more with it and active than Dusty has lately.
I mean, he looked fine on Legends House. He just looked, you know, old, but he didn't look sick. He looked better than Mean Gene does. Mean Gene looked like he was going to die on the show.
Yeah.
But Piper looked fine in that aspect. Dusty, the problem was Dusty was, you know, I hate to be blunt, but Dusty was fat for a long time. So when he lost a lot of the weight, he looked very withdrawn. Piper pretty much looked the same for most of the last, like, 20 years of his life. So it definitely, like, when you don't hear about somebody for a while, it definitely hits you in the face. And, I mean, I knew he had been battling the cancer, but he seemed to have been in remission and everything. And, you know, his heart went out when he slept. So I don't know if it was the chemo all that time or the radiation that did it in. I don't know. But
years of drug abuse.
Well, that too. But, you know. Yeah, I got blown away because it was a weird day of emotions for me because it was like, you know, my God, you know, the Mets had just gotten Cespedes. So I was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And then all of a sudden, I think it was Armento actually sent me the link. He goes, check out TMZ. And I said, oh, Debbie Downer. So, and I look at it and I go, oh, thanks. Figures Yankee fan. But no, I didn't know what to do. The first thing I did was I turned around to the girl in my department who does my job for them. For the network, and I said to her, I said, well, I hope you don't plan on leaving anytime soon. I don't know what they did that night. I don't think they did anything, but
right.
I guess they're not going to bump the – I wonder if that's why they did the thing at the beginning, because I don't think they're bumping the podcast tonight, right? Is it tonight? Tonight's the Stone Cold
– with Paige.
With Paige, right?
Right. No, I don't think – I haven't seen anything promoted, so
I bet you they'll do something working on something. They'll do something. I bet you they'll do something after SmackDown on Thursday night.
I'm sure
on the network. So.
And that's fine. I'd rather them take their time and do it right. And, you know, Dusty, they ended up doing a bunch of stuff for it. So
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
sure it's.
They'll
I'm
do
sure
a special Piper show. Yeah, exactly.
So, favorite Piper match? Is it the Brett one? Do you have any others? Then we didn't even talk about the dog collar.
I think the two that stand out for me is for two very different reasons, is the dog collar match with Valentine at Starrcade 83. This is just, I watched it with Dr. G Friday night. It was just so violent. And he was a babyface. And then the Brett match at WrestleMania 8. Although, I tell you, the tag match at 1. It speaks for itself. You know, take this into consideration, JR. I don't know if we've ever really wrapped our head around this. This guy was in a main event level match for the first two super shows, Starrcade 83 mm-hmm. and WrestleMania 1.
Yep.
In different roles, babyface in one, big time, incredibly awesome heel in the other. And think about it. You know, the other cool thing, here's a guy. You know, everyone talks about the Freebirds having the music and everything. Here's a guy as a heel, JR. And the guy got the whole, you know, the bagpipes at the Garden. I mean, who else gets that? A guy who earned it. And, you know, he just loved to be hated. And I was talking to, I said to Dr. G, because I think he may wear his Hot Rod shirt at SummerSlam. I said, you know, the Hot Rod shirt, maybe this is more of an insider wrestling thing, like for, you know, you, me, and other diehards. Yeah, the Hot Rod shirt is iconic, but I tell you, old school wrestling fans, that Panther shirt might be just as close. And then occasionally he wore a Superman t-shirt too, but I think the Panther shirt almost is as iconic as the Hot Rod tee. But yeah, I would say the dog collar match with Valentine at Starrcade 83 and the match with Brett at WrestleMania 8.
I love this feud too with Rude in 89 when he cost them the belt at SummerSlam. They had the Rowdy Rude Brood match at Survivor Series.
They had a very good cage match show at the Garden.
I need to rewatch that one. I haven't seen that one in a long time.
Is
it on Piper's DVD?
It's on Piper's DVD. I'm wondering if that house show's on the network. I'll have to look. But that match is definitely on Piper's DVD. Definitely.
It was what, December 89?
November. Yeah, December 89. It was after.
It was like the very end of the year. I feel like it was December.
Yeah, it was after Survivor Series. It wasn't before. Yeah. It's definitely on the Piper DVD, but I'm wondering if that house show is on the network. Interesting. Yeah, that's a good match too.
Yeah, I mean, just you know, loaded with moments and memories again. And nothing we can do justice in this quick time here. We do refer you to Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner, and we'll see who he has on. I'm sure they'll go in depth like they did for Dusty. And if you haven't listened to the Dusty one, I recommend it as well. They go just right through his career. I mean, I'm like an hour and a half in, and it's you know, we're still in. Whatever, Florida, I think.
Yeah,
so it's a lot to cover.
Yeah. How about this? Fathom this, JR. This guy got Virgil over.
Yeah, did a hell of a job getting Virgil
over.
You know,
I mean, Jesus. He got Virgil over on one leg.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great feud, too, with him. And another great Piper moment in SummerSlam 91, rooting on Virgil to beat DiBiase. And
come on,
crazy
Virgil!
When he wins.
Yo, shut up, Bobby!
So and, of course, when he you know, pace Vince with the chair on that Superstars when Flair comes out.
Yep.
Another great moment. So, you know, tons of great stuff. The DVD is on the network. Tons of Piper moments on the network. And like we said, I'm sure they will be putting up plenty of memories. You know, one of the legends, one of the most memorable names from the early Rock and Wrestling era, one of the most memorable faces even from the new generation era at times, in the kind of the legend ambassador role. Mm-hmm. We just reviewed his match with Lawler for our King of the Ring 94 Vintage 4 Refresh.
Yep.
And, of course, his appearance at WrestleMania 11 we covered as well. And we'll be diving very soon into his run with Goldust in early 96.
Yes.
Which is really good, too. So,
I mean, the time that I've known you, you know, almost 12 years now, I know for a fact that Brett Piper at 8 is probably one of your 5 favorite matches ever, probably.
Yeah, it's certainly up there. Just a great match, the great looking arena where it's all bright and you get the, yep, you know, Brett's blood staining the mat. Gorilla and Bobby were great with the what the hell, use the bell and, you know, waffle him with it and all that stuff. And Brett reversing the sleeper, setting him up with the sleeper and then rolling him over for the win, clean in the middle of the ring, the great promo beforehand with the two of them and Mean Gene arguing. And even the build was really good too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he'll be missed. You know, one of those guys that we're going to, It'll you know, it's already hit us, but I think it'll hit us more over the next year or so when he's not popping in, you know, popping in at Mania, showing up at the Hall of Fame, cutting promos here and there, doing random pits on Raw. Like, I think that's when we'll really start to take it, really set in when we're not seeing him on those things anymore.
Right. What was another favorite Piper moment? I just thought of it. Was it 06? It must have been 06 because it was during the Spirit Squad run. Remember when they were on Raw and Flair brought him out, and then he brought out DiBiase and IRS, like the Money Inc. reunion, had that whole like crazy late 91 team with him?
Yes.
I think it was it Night After Survivor Series? No. Maybe it was Night After Survivor Series. I don't know, but there was a great Raw, and Flair brought out Piper, and he brought out Money Inc., and I think Slaughter probably or whatever, but that was a cool Piper moment too.
All right, so here it is. It was December 26, 2010. Featured an in-ring segment of Piper's Pit in which Roddy Piper discussed the top 5 superstars of all time DVD before introducing his guest Tito Santana, subbing for Slaughter. After 2 had words, Michael Cole interrupted and said the Raw GM wanted him out of the ring and that they were has-beens. Then Jimmy and Jey Uso escort Piper and Tito from the ring, and they smack the Usos and clear them from the ring. That was 2010, but I feel like I'm still even missing one. Hang on, let me check the year before.
Well, there was a great pit in 05 when Shawn was in his heel run before facing Hogan at SummerSlam.
Right.
That was a good pit. Obviously, as you mentioned, the pit at WrestleMania 21 with him and Stone Cold. I'm trying to think of some other pits off the top of my head. I know the one you're talking about.
Right here, November 09. Because I was still reviewing. It's one of the last ones I reviewed.
On the old board.
On the old board. Hang on one sec. Featured an opening backstage segment of Piper's Pit in which Roddy Piper, the host of the episode. So, yeah, he hosted the whole episode.
Okay.
Yeah, so it looks like he was on that whole night. I think that's the one I'm thinking of. Because then he did some stuff with Jericho.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think there was a pit, too, with Cena where he kind of got in his face. I want to say it was like late 11.
Yeah, there was one where he cut an awesome promo, remember? Everyone was like...
It was like late. I thought it was late 11, early 12, because I thought it was leading up to the match with Rock at 28. I thought, anyway. Wait,
who was the other guy he cut a great promo on where he did? They brought
Orton?
Him out. Yes, it was Orton.
Orton.
He did an awesome with Orton, I'm pretty sure. I forget when. I don't know. He's had a bunch on Raw over the years, but he did one really one where he sold a match really well. Remember?
Yeah.
What the frick match was it? Was it Cena Orton? Maybe it was. There was some match where he came out and he just did this tremendous job. Like, it was a match that people weren't like crazy about, and then he cut this awesome pit and like fired everyone up, and everyone wanted to see it again. I can't remember what it was for the life of me. But speaking of 08 in Madison Square Garden, of course, is when he was in the Rumbles, the surprise entrant, and they did the thing with him and Snuka. That was a great moment, too.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So, all right.
Great moments.
And we'll leave that there. Like I said, there'll be plenty of other coverage. Jason Greenhouse had a really cool piece up today,
mm-hmm,
Placement Nation, where he did a playlist of all different links of, you know, matches and moments of Piper on the network and some YouTube stuff that is not on the network. So be sure to check that out. Again, Exile Ambassador coming this week, looking at the life of Piper. I'm sure we'll talk about it on the Kevin Kelly show as well. I'm sure the main event guys will touch on it too. So one of the all-time greats, paying our respects here today to the Hot Rod Rowdy, Roddy Piper. Go watch some Piper matches before you head to bed tonight. And Scott, why don't we go ahead? We'll pause. We'll take a quick break, and we will return with our review of Armageddon.
just when they think they've had the answers.
Because
you heard of Piper's Pit. Welcome to Rudman's Rendezvous. This is really an honor for me to be able to do the interviewing of Rowdy Roddy Piper, the pride of Scotland, as we approach probably what will be one of the bloodiest matches ever seen here in Philadelphia at the Spectrum.
What do they call you, Killer Who? What do they call you, Killer what?
Killer
Cow. Used to call that Killer Snooker. It didn't look too good down there with coconuts all over his head, bananas shoved up his nose, fresh fruit salad. Now, well, I'm sitting there beating him down, and now he's going to jump back into the ring with a concussion. The guy's not supposed to be in the ring right now. He's in the doctor's office just checking out right now. Go down there and see him. The doctor say to him, are you all right? The guy's still trying to do his ABCs. The problem is he's starting from Z. He's working backwards, hasn't got a clue what he's doing. Going to come in here and fight Hot Rod. You see, the thing was that Jimmy Snuka is supposed to be a legend, right? Jimmy Snuka is supposed to be a legend of professional wrestling. Everybody says, ooh, don't touch Jimmy Snuka. Ooh, don't touch Jimmy Snuka. Do you think for one second that I was going to come out myself, prime time, going to come out and let this geek that can't talk English, can't do nothing, man, all he's going to do is sit there? I says, I'll tell you what, Jimmy, here's the microphone, go ahead and talk. Exactly the same thing happened, man. Absolutely nothing there. Hello? Not wrapped too tight, man. Nothing. Stand up. He allows me to have a coconut in my hand, and he bends over like after I've insulted him for 3 minutes, told him his women are fat, told him his mother or whatever I told him, man. Yeah, after that, 3 minutes, he puts the microphone down and he says to me, are you insulting me? No, just ribbing, Jimmy. Just ribbing, man. Are you kidding? And they say that I didn't deserve to hit him with a coconut. They expect me, it's like this, when they expect me, they say, well, why didn't you put the coconut down? Why didn't you put all the stuff down and just fight him like a man? you see, obviously, that's why you're sitting there and I'm standing here, because I go under the philosophy that you don't hit a man when he's down, you kick him, it's much easier, we're not playing no games here, I feed my family from fighting. I will fight anybody, any place, anytime, bar, I don't give a damn, man. You just put some bucks down, I'll fight you, man, cameraman, I'll fight you, I don't care. I'll fight anybody, any place. So you want to fool around with Big Rod, man? This is the home of the Loch Ness Monster, brother.
Thank you very much, Rowdy Roddy Piper. But now we're going to see what really happens. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast.
Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's tag teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
Fourth pack is back, cause of mass destruction. Guess who's here? The bad boys are wrestling. Testing competition when the war does their mission. Not no mercy, see the rings like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the wolf pack. Here to prove a point, number one, just believe that you don't want to test it with them. I'll be there for...
All right, Nation, we are back here. Just paid a little tribute to the late, great Roddy Piper. We got some Stephen Sutton facts on Piper's career we'll cover in one moment. Just wanted to quickly talk placemanation.com. New episode of Between the Sheets, episode 2, looking at July 27th to August 3rd, 1990. Chris Zellner, David Bixenspan, joined by Joe Gagne of Joe vs. the World to discuss the week that was July 27th to August 3rd in 1990. Like I said, if you haven't listened to the show, it's a really fun one. The first one looked at... it was 88, I believe. No, it was 89. It was June 89 because I looked at Bash 89. Yep. Or July 89, somewhere on there. It was really cool. So they're picking basically, you know, obviously it was July because what they're doing is they're picking this week in wrestling history in different years, and they're going through the different news sheets and newsletters of the day and kind of going through the news and their memories of what was going on at that time. So it's a really insightful look behind the scenes of what was going on in these years going past. So be sure to check that out. New episode of Extra Point, you and Dr. G talked about Roddy Piper, did a little baseball with Joe Barnhart as well. Yep. Scott Keith's SummerSlam countdown going on at the site. We're going to post all of Keith's SummerSlam rants here. We got 88 and 89 up, so if you want to read Scott's thoughts on SummerSlams from years gone by, check that out. New installment of Brainbuster, the pro wrestling quiz show with Johnny Sorrow. The Comics Halfy Awards podcast complimenting the written piece as they look at and dole out awards on the first half of the year in the world of comics. New episode of This Week in Wrestling, Steven, Pete, and Johnny. With Dylan Hales looking at what was going on this past week in the world of wrestling. Exile on Bad Street looking at Memphis wrestling as well. Will, my buddy there from the Dangerous Alliance, along with Chris and Phil Schneider, looking at the living legends from Memphis wrestling. And of course, you can get all our weekly recaps. Raw with Brian Bayless, Tough Enough with Jordan and Isaac Duncan. Seinfeld with our crew there. PTBN's main event, episode 40, looked at Hulk Hogan, the WWE conference call, and of course, more. TNA history as well. Scott, new installment, a new series here going on. It's myself, Brad Woodling, Chad Campbell, Jason Greenhouse, Dan McGinn. We are going chronologically through the WWE Network. Started with the March 17th, 75 MSG house show. Up next is a house show from 76, and we are basically, we made a list of everything in order on the network, and we're going to watch it in order. So a lot of house shows early on.
Wow.
And then a lot of world class is coming up soon. So we're just going in the order that everything originally aired. And they're not full reviews. They're basically like the Seinfeld stuff, like the old cowboy goes to class style, where it's just quick bullet points of different categories that we give comments on. So you know, check that out and maybe play along if you want to. Share your thoughts on that on the Facebook page. So,
sounds fun.
Yeah, it's been fun. Well, the second MSG show was a little bit tougher than the first. But
was it?
Yeah. So anyway, placemanation.com. Be sure to check us out all the time, every day. We have
if you wanted your share of Baron Mikhail Scicluna.
Oh, yeah. He was on the 76 show for sure. 2 out of 3 fall midget action, too.
And Dean Ho. Oh, God. Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
got a really hot match sitting in there somewhere too.
Well, a really hot Bruno Billy Graham match that was really fun.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, all right, here's
Bruno's
some...
got a hot match of that 75 show, right? Who did he fight?
He fought
Spiros Arion.
My new favorite heel. I'd never
that
seen
that guy was awesome.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Crazy fucking hair. It was awesome.
He was on the second show too. So, check it out, placemanation.com.
Yes.
Steven Sutton sent us some Roddy Piper facts. I'm going to read through these very quickly, and then we'll get to Armageddon. He had 1,069 matches, 566 wins, 412 losses. This is, I guess, with the WWE. Held 15 championships overall, 9 singles, 6 tag. Had 123 actor credits and 2 producer credits to his name. Mm-hmm. Inducted to the California Alley Club in 2001, the Observer Hall of Fame in 96, 2007 Class of Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum. Won 12 awards from Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Of course, won a Slammy Award, and just one of the all-time greats. So that's it. Some notes from Steven, and of course, then he goes into Armageddon. So why don't you set us up there, and we'll now transition to 2004. Yes.
And one more quick Piper thing before we transition. Somebody posted on Facebook that there was an undocumented world title win for Piper, I guess sometime in 92, at a house show somewhere in Canada. Obviously, it was before the Saskatoon that Brett won. He beat Flair in a cage. With that match alone would be gold for me live. And I don't know if it was Fink or whoever the ring announcer was, announced him as the WWF champion.
Hmm.
I'll have to look that up. Sometime, it had to have been sometime in between, obviously between September 1st when he beat Savage and October 12th when he lost to Brett. But we have to check that out. So there is one moment in time that he was actually announced as a world champion. So according to, I'm trying to remember who it was on Facebook. Anyway, let's dive in.
Okay.
Something that's not as good as a Piper Flair
close
cage match. But, you know, we got some surprising opinions.
Mm-hmm.
December 12th, 2004, live from the Gwinnett Center in the nearby suburb of...
Hey, what is going on here?
I thought maybe you'd been late since we started late. Damn. From the nearby suburb of Duluth, Georgia. I was looking it up, JR. Apparently it is part of metropolitan Atlanta.
Sure it is.
Now, I know during the show... I'll have to ask Mr.
Guess
or Mr. Chadley. Even though at the event, before I get bitched at for this, Michael says we are in Atlanta. Well, sort of, but not really.
Oh, did you say we're in Duluth?
I mean, well, that's my whole. But I know. No, of course not. But
is this Clash 7.
We're in Mobile.
It may have well been. I mean, I don't know what brought them to this slice of heaven here in the Gwinnett Center. 6400 Sugarloaf Parkway in Duluth. Capacity 11,355 for ice hockey, 1275 for basketball, 13,100 for all them damn country concerts. June 26, 2001, broke ground, opened in 2003, so only about a year and a half old at this point.
Yep.
Cost $91.5 million. The Georgia Force of the AFL played there. Mm-hmm. The Gwinnett Gladiators still play there, ECHL. Atlanta Steam of the LFL, now known as the Legends Football League, no longer the Lingerie League. And the Georgia Swarm just started playing this year, the NLL.
Yes, they moved from, and the only reason I know this is because we used to air them. They moved from some other city, Seattle, I think, or something. Not that it mattered.
The Georgia High School Wrestling State Championships take place there every year.
Oh, anyway.
They had a couple of Raws there during this time. TNA's mm-hmm. been there a few times. WNBA Finals happened there. And the UFC Fight Night, January 14, was there. Rockhold versus Philippou.
Ah. Your attendance on this night was 4,500. So nowhere close to a sellout. Your buy rate, 0.59, which actually...
They were the Minnesota Swarm, by the way.
Minnesota Swarm. I knew it was somewhere like North Seattle, Minnesota, northern part of the country.
Minnesota is definitely pretty much a suburb of Seattle. So.
Yes, somewhere north of Duluth. Yes. If it goes from one Duluth to another Duluth. Again, buy rate 0.59, which for 2 weeks before Christmas isn't too bad. And your announcers at ringside, Michael Cole and Taz.
Jeez.
Sutton facts.
Yeah, so The Rock retired. 842 matches, his TV record, 403, 138, and 43. He officially retired.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of 2004, TV by the numbers, SmackDown, 278, Velocity, 133, Impact at 28. Let's see. On 12/8, Blade Trinity was released with Triple H playing Jarko Grimwood.
Yes,
and that's what he calls you when you're on the covers.
Let me see. Come here,
Jarko.
Wood,
Chris Golo. It's very grim down there. And that's it. We got some ROH and TNA stuff, but we're gonna move quickly through this. So Armageddon Heat, Akio, and Billy Kidman defeated Chavo Guerrero and Paul London. Kind of a, you know, when you look at this card, I guess we'll talk about this. They had room for those guys. You know, what are they doing on what are they doing on Velocity or Heat or whatever? I mean, they got
very interesting. Yeah.
Kind of a thin card. Those guys have been hot, or they had been hot anyway. Mm. And no longer on, we get the usual end of days type of feel for the show. The end is near. And that played off nicely, I thought, because as we'll see towards the end, it's kind of the end of the road, or so we thought maybe for JBL, kind of Armageddon for his reign. So the whole end of the road deathly feeling felt very fitting this time around.
Mm. And, you know, I just realized something when Sutton gave those facts earlier. I don't think I've ever seen in his WWF career Roddy Piper lose a match, and he had 412 losses. How the hell did all those happen?
Well, probably a lot of me count out and.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, maybe that wasn't WWF then. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where he gets this stuff.
I just thought that was not 412 law. I don't think I've ever seen him lose ever.
Maybe it counted WCW, too. I don't know.
Maybe. Anyway. All right, let's dive in. We open JR.
Someday he'll actually put that, and so I don't have to guess every time whether it's WWE or there's not. And what promotion?
I feel so gutted. All right, our first match of the evening. Title match, JR. Right out of the bat. Right out of the gate. The Blue Belts, the WWE Tag Team Championships on the line. Your champions.
Get the blue balls with the Jarko Deadwood.
the champions, JR, changed since, I believe, the last time we were on air.
I believe you're correct.
Tell us where the title change happened.
On 11/18, Rey Mysterio and Rob Van Dam defeated Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree in a non-title match. The next week, Rey pinned Dupree and RVD pinned Kenzo by DQ in single matches. Defeated Kenzo by DQ. On 12/2, Rey and RVD continued to roll as they teamed with Torrey Wilson to defeat Kenzo, Rene, and Hiroko. All this was going on, Kenzo began an infatuation with Torrey Wilson, much to the consternation of his wife. She claimed her body was better and requested a bra and panties match with Torrey to prove it. On 12/9, Hiroko and Torrey began their match at the brawl backstage. It ended up in the ring. That brought out RVD and Rey and Rene and Kenzo as well. It also brought out Teddy Long, who made an impromptu title match. Of course, as we're getting going with Teddy here, will become a much running theme. You know, you'll compete tonight in a tag team match.
Yes.
RVD and Rey cashed in, winning the gold from Kenzo and Rene. Pay-per-view match is still on, and now the titles obviously have swapped. So we have RVD and Rey coming in as champions. Nice payoff, I thought, to RVD and Rey's run. I thought it was well-deserved and a good fit. And they, you know, they should have been set up for a lengthy run here, I thought. So crowd very into them. Rey really had cool tights and a mask combo here. I liked it a lot. And RVD color coordinated the yellow and black, which is the cool look. I like this feud overall as well. Kenzo uses his martial arts strikes early until RVD kicks back and tags Rey. Rey and RVD have a very nice double-team arsenal that's grown. Rey has a lot of crisp flying as well. Kenzo clubs him down, brings him to the corner. Rey makes a comeback attempt, but Dupree mows him down. Rey wipes out Dupree and hits a sunset flip powerbomb on Kenzo to the floor after an assist from RVD. All four brawl on the floor. Champs start to roll, but Dupree fights back to prevent a double-team and takes out both, but he can't tag as Kenzo's wiped out on the floor. Champs get a near fall after a near nice springboard splash double-team. Kenzo takes over and goes to work on RVD for a double heat segment and works to keep him grounded. Rey comes back in, but Hiroko's interference leads to a hot shot, and Torrey comes out, runs off Hiroko. Rey gets beaten on for a third heat segment. I like the cool structure to this match with three heat segments. The challengers work the neck, and they're using quick tags. Dupree does the great French tickler as Taz sings along. We get a long assault on Rey, who then trips up Dupree and sends him to the post to make the tag, and the crowd is really into it now. Champs double team again and get a near fall. Lots of near falls late in the match. Rey hits a double 619. RVD hits his frog splash on Dupree for the win. Very good hot opener. Really worked well across the board. I thought everyone looked good. There was no real slow spots despite the three heat segments. And I think Dupree and Suzuki have really found a niche and gelled really nicely as a team. I thought it really saved both of them. And I'm glad RVD and Rey retained. They deserve a good run. And this actually surprised me. I thought they lost here. I thought Kenzo and Dupree got it right back. So I was pleasantly surprised when RVD and Rey won. What did you think of the structure with the three heat segments, and were you glad at the result? And what do you think of the three questions? And what do you think of Kenzo and Dupree gelling together as a team?
Number one, actually, I want to add one beforehand. I now lately, anytime there's a Dupree match that I watch at my desk, I do laugh out loud when Taz starts singing it. I'm French. I like to tickle. I'm a tickle Frencher.
Even got Cole to crack up this time.
Yeah, he's such a doofus. All right, question one. Was I surprised at the change? Is that what you said? Oh, no, the structure of the match.
Yeah,
I loved it a lot.
The structure of the match, yeah.
I did. I love this match. I mean, you had four good workers, four very unique guys, because RVD and Rey work similar together. RVD's a little more of a grounder you know, grounded worker than Ray is, but they both obviously are good high flyers. Suzuki's kind of a high flyer with a kind of a bigger worker's build. And then you got Dupree, who you, over time, great tag team guy. I think that's established. But you wonder what kind of worker he actually is. But he blended in perfectly with this group. And, you know, kind of maybe the biggest guy physique-wise of the quartet. So he kind of was the big bruiser kind of muscling the heat segment. So I thought it was a perfect setup. And you wanted to get a good meaty match. So we had a lot of little, you know, one-minute, two-minute stinkers later on. So, you know, this opener needed to have a little meat to it and close to 17 minutes. Mm-hmm. You needed multiple heat segments here, and I thought it worked perfectly. It was a good kind of structured ladder-type formula match in terms of, you know, you go a couple steps, heat segment, a couple more steps, heat segment. And I thought it worked great. So, yeah, no doubt I really loved the structure.
And the crowd was super into it, too. They were really into it at RVD. And, you know, I think both of those guys should be being used elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But if they have to be here, they're being used well as a team. Like, I felt good for them. Like, they work well together. They're unique. They play off each other well with their offense. They were fitting as champs. The crowd is really into them. So, I like the usage of them here, despite me thinking they could both be bigger than they are.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it worked great.
Were you surprised about the finish?
That they kept the belts?
Yeah,
no.
Were you excited? You know, were you happy, pleased?
Oh, absolutely.
Was your Grim Wood standing at attention?
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I thought they had a chance to keep the straps, and I don't think it affected Suzuki and Dupree status as a heel team in the division on the show. I was kind of glad that they, because we've talked about it, you know, incessantly since 2001 into 2002, that we don't know what the hell Ray's doing or where he's doing it. But right now, Ray is not in the cruiserweight situation,
right?
And he won't be into 2005 either. And we'll document that when we get there. So this was a good spot for both of them anyway. So I had no problem with it at all. I was happy with the win. I don't think it hurt Dupree and Suzuki at all. And your third question, I think they're just to kind of piggyback the second question, I think they're a fantastic heel tag team.
Yeah.
I think the whole package was great. I think, you could put them in other places, but the cruiserweight division, which is where most of these guys would go, have a specific situation right now that doesn't fit any of these guys, and we'll get to them later. So I had no problem with this. Give them the straps, and there's really nobody else in the tag division on SmackDown at the moment, so you might as well let these guys go out and bust their ass for 18 or for 17 minutes. Fine with me. I thought it was great.
Yep,
I agree. So there you go. RVD and Ray retain the blue belts, the WWE tag team titles, in a very hard fought win. Good match against Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree.
All right, so we have a little frivolity next. As Kurt Angle comes out with security, one is carrying his gold medal and having a special Kurt Angle Invitational with the medal on the line, and out comes Santa Claus. I thought this was actually pretty good heel stuff, but
good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Is Angle running around with underwear on in the backyard?
Yes, watering flowers, yes.
He's got the bald head.
Yes. I figure that's why he fit.
So, solid heel stuff, I thought, but it's obvious just a time filler on a depleted roster.
Yep.
Kurt makes a pretty funny elf joke to Taz, then rants about how his daughter ignores him and only writes to Santa. Says Santa gives real heroes a bad name, and then hits an Angle Slam and ankle lock. It was kept pretty quick. So, even though it's clearly just filling time, I thought it was fine. And the crowd dug it too. And Angle's such a good heel that he makes stuff like this work as long as it doesn't edge on too long. So, but that brings us to our next, I guess, match.
I don't know what this is, but obviously we are towards the tail end of what was the third season, right? Was this the third season?
Fourth
season.
Yep.
of Tough Enough. Of course, the first season was won by Maven and Nydia. Nydia is already gone, and Maven sort of at the pseudo top of the Raw card at the moment, for the moment anyway. Second season, won by two women, Linda Miles, who's already gone, and Jackie, who we'll talk about in a little bit. And then the third season was
John Hennigan and Matthews, Matt Capitelli.
Right? Matt Capitelli. Matt Capitelli, yes.
Yep.
Who was in, at the time, was in Ohio.
Where in Ohio?
Columbus, Ohio. I don't think it was Columbus. Where is Ohio Valley? Yeah, it's kind of near Pillman's old stomping grounds, right? Kind of near the Kentucky border?
Yeah. Yep, I think you're right.
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, so now here we are, our fourth season of Tough Enough, and we're down to the final two guys. There were some memorable guys, though, in this class, JR, and they rattled off all the contestants at the beginning of the segment.
Yes.
a guy by the name of Ryan Reeve.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a second. So
yeah, so
go ahead, set up the match. We'll talk.
So anyway, so it was a big class. We'll get into the guys in a minute, and we were down to the final two guys. Now tonight was not the final. Like this was not to decide the winner. They would do that, I believe, on the following.
This is like the final challenge.
SmackDown. This was like the final, challenge before the actual finale, which I think was that following Thursday SmackDown. So tell us how we got here, JR.
All right, so, the two guys here, I guess we'll get to that in a second. So the fourth edition of Tough Enough was a new format. As the competition was moved to SmackDown instead of being its own show on MTV. Dodi aired various segments each week on TV, similar to the Diva Search, and it was just on SmackDown. Mm-hmm. The contestants for this edition were Nick Mitchell, Ryan Reeves, who, of course, like you mentioned, we would know later on, mm-hmm. Chris Nowaraki, Justice Smith, Daniel Rodimer, who backstage they loved, and he would never really amount to too much. Daniel Pewter and Mike Mizanin. Competitors were eliminated each week on TV until the favorite Pewter and underdog Mizanin remained. They were set to face off at a boxing match here, and then we'll get to what happened afterwards in a moment. So Daniel Pewter began training in MMA and professional wrestling at age 16. In age 2004, signed up for Tough Enough, and based on his background, was seen as the favorite to win the competition. He was best known for nearly making Kurt Angle tap out during an unscripted segment on the 11-4 SmackDown. During a Tough Enough segment, Pewter challenged Angle to a fight, which Angle accepted. Shortly after the start, Pewter hooked Angle in a key lock submission, a move that very few can get out of and could lead to serious injury. Angle refused to tap and was positioned on top of Pewter while in the hold, leading to referee Jimmy Cordero sliding in and counting three, giving Angle the pinfall win. Pewter's shoulders were not down. I think we talked about the Survivor Series, but Angle was incensed backstage, and it seemed Pewter's career was off to a tough start. Mike Mizanin grew up in Parma, Ohio, moon over Parma, as Drew Carey once sang. Mm-hmm. Before eventually moving to Southern California to enroll in acting classes. In 2001, he dropped out of college and joined the cast of MTV's Real World back to New York. During his stint on the show, Mizanin unleashed his alter ego wrestling character known as The Miz. After that season wrapped up, Mizanin made a usual reality star circuit, hitting various MTV competitions and other reality programs. After gaining his Real World notoriety, Mizanin decided to pursue a career in wrestling and signed up for the Ultimate Pro Wrestling University in California. Made his in-ring debut in 2003 as The Miz. In 2004, signed up for Tough Enough. So, looked at as an underdog in many ways. But, a guy, some respected. It was his dream. He always wanted to be a wrestler. He clearly respected the business and knew its history and wanted to be part of it. Many looked at Pewter as being a guy that was just here to cash a check and then maybe move back into MMA or do anything else and not hang out here for too long. So, it was kind of that tier. Teared off by the guy who is probably better fit versus the guy who's a little bit goofier but really loves the business. So kind of torn were the fans, and we'd have this match here, or this fight. It'd be a Dixie Dogfight boxing match, and on December 16th, Pewter would be announced as the overall winning of the competition. Many thought maybe Miz was going to sneak it out, but Pewter ends up winning. We'll talk about him some more. All of the competitors were eventually signed to developmental deals except for Justice Smith. So they were all given chances anyway down in Ohio Valley. So we get a long Tough Enough recap here. The final challenge, a good promo set up with the Miz already showing how much better of a talker he is. Pewter better in the ring thanks to his background, but just the promos alone. Even though not great by Miz, you could tell he's got it in him. Teddy Long opens the match with a long promo. Just tons of time killing here. At one point, I think it was like 40 minutes or something between Kurt Angle, Santa Claus, and this stuff between matches. Al Snow comes out on commentary because he had been, obviously, the coach. Pretty big build-up, and it felt important until the bell. Like, they really did a good job making the fight feel like a big deal. Miz goes right at Pewter and doesn't back down. He desperately wants to win because of what the job means to him. Feeling, like I said, was that Pewter was just cashing checks. Really energetic first round. Miz is shaken up and weak-legged after a shot to the back of the head. Crowd gets a bit bored here. Snow says Pewter would have been DQ'd in a regular boxing match. Miz goes for the knockout, lands a few shots, but Pewter hammers him late. We get no knockout, so that's kind of a win for Miz that he hung in. It goes to a fan vote. The crowd is a bit more behind Pewter, but not a ton. Both got booed. Miz probably deserved the win, I thought. Long gives the match to Pewter, and of course, the winner will be announced later. I thought Miz was impressive here for what it was. Like, I thought he did a good job. I thought Pewter should have been a little bit embarrassed that he didn't knock him out.
Yeah. Or made him tap, Oh, wait, no, they didn't. It wasn't that. It was a regular boxing match. Never mind. Would have been better if they made him tap. I figure if they changed the rules. Overall, I even thought this was kind of time fill. Considering there was like 9 matches on this show, which is even stranger.
Well, I mean, like I said, from the end of the tag title match to our next match, I mean, it was a while because this, you know, this goes a little bit, and then you had what was the exact length on this? Was
I think it was like an even 3 minutes.
Right.
Well, it was a 1 minute per round, I guess, or something.
Yeah. So whatever. Yeah. Plus all the Gaga and the
and all
the room.
Yeah.
Yes. It was a while between matches, and it kind of killed off what had been a hot crowd. Not totally, but it definitely bored them, and they had been really into the show with the tag match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. There wasn't much to this. You could just tell. I mean, you could tell by the way Vince wants a WWE superstar to be that Pewter just wasn't that guy.
No, he was short.
He had no personality.
Stupid
was,
face.
Yeah, he's stupid. Yeah, stupid face. He didn't even have a mustache.
Out of the Shamrock School of Weird.
Yeah, mushy face. Yeah. Come on, you want to go? Yeah, it was Miz may not have been as disciplined in ring wise, but usually that you can sort of maneuver with a guy like that. But the fact that he had all the intangibles to be a fun personality, and then you can kind of do the reverse of Trish Stratus, where you can, you know, as long as she looks good, you can work the wrestling in later. Similar to Miz in that aspect. Make sure, you know, the guy's got a pretty good personality. He can work a crowd. He's got some ability. We can fix the rest of that. Whereas Pewter, you can't really do it in reverse. There's not a lot of Chris Benoit's in the world. You know?
This thing feels really, really rigged. Like, it was just like crowd vote in the arena. I don't know. I feel like they could have easily swung it if they wanted Miz to win. But I think in their eyes, they didn't really give a shit because they knew they were just going to sign anyone.
Right.
Or sign them all anyway. So
yeah.
I mean, they figured Pewter would at least add a legitimacy to the title of.
That's probably what it was. Yeah. So. Anyway, Daniel Pewter wins the Dixie Dog Fight. Bring my love to me tonight. Guide her to East Lake underneath your silvery light. We met at Ashtabula. She was doing the hula. I handed her my radishes and pledged my love that night. Sugar Tits here in Palmer, Ohio, WQXT, playing the hits. Oh God, that was good.
Oh, Drew Carey, this is nowhere. Where is it? You never see it anywhere. Such a
what,
good show.
Parma? Oh,
Drew
Carey. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like it's never in syndication anywhere. I don't think it's on Netflix or anything.
Is that like a? I don't think it's on Hulu. That's weird, huh?
I don't know. It was a good show. I always watched.
It's a great show.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh well.
The Warsaw.
Someday,
right? Is that the bar?
Yeah. Yep.
The Warsaw.
Someday it'll be back in our lives.
Yep. What's his name? Ryan. What the hell's his name? He's always on. Whose line is it anyway?
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan, yeah.
Ryan Styles.
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Styles.
Ryan Styles. Ryan Reynolds. So
it went 9 years, that show.
Really? What was it, like 03 to 12?
Mm-hmm. No, 95 to 2004.
Oh,
3 to 12.
When I first said that, I thought to myself, wait, that doesn't sound right. Wow, 95? I even think that's kind of early. Really? 95?
Yeah.
I thought it was more like 98.
CW showed it for a while.
ABC?
Well, I mean in the syndication.
Oh, in syndication. Right.
Yeah, and I think they only did one season on DVD.
Hmm.
Weird. I don't know what's going on with that show.
Like copyright issues?
I don't know. It's...
Because that's what it was with WKRP in Cincinnati. They didn't put that on DVD for
decades.
It's
weird. Every show is on syndication with a million channels. I don't know why this one's not.
Yeah, really weird.
Very weird. Anyway, went off time for this shit tonight.
No.
All right, what's next?
But that might be the next show to be that or Curb to be done on PolicemanNation.com. All right. Next up, another tag match. Involving a couple of guys who now have new roles. I mean, we've seen them already. Speaking of Linda Miles, but now they have new roles themselves, and they're taking on a slap together singles team. What are we doing here, JR?
On 11/25, Doug Basham came from the crowd to help JBL and Orlando Jordan defeat Eddie Guerrero and Booker T. A week earlier, JBL had revealed that the former Divas Search contestant Amy Weber would be his image consultant and announced that the Bashams were now his secretaries of defense as he was building his cabinet. Did you like this idea, Scott? I loved it.
Absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome. Because we've said this consistently throughout the SmackDown half of 04 is that JBL needed a faction, and now he had one of solid people. Yeah, no, perfect move. Basham's had nothing else to do. They're a little, you know, they're Linda Miles or Shaniqua, their little bondage girl is gone. And yeah, no, perfect. Worked out perfectly.
JBL sitting in the back thinking, I need, you know, I got a lot of stuff I got to carry from town to town. Who would be a great, I need guy, I mean, all these bags and these bundles that could load it. Who has a truck that could carry the stuff from town to town? I'm gonna call Doug and Danny. IPS guys are gonna come and be part of my cabinet, carrying my shit from town to town. But no, I really liked the idea of the cabinet. I thought it made sense. I liked it. You know, very political. Very. It just fit JBO well to do something like that, to have a cabinet, not just like a, you know, random stable. And it bring Amy Weber in worked well too. So we'll talk more about them later. But the match itself here, Basham's back on pay per view for the first time in a while. Bonus match, as we hear before it starts. Haas and Holly still teaming up. Things a little heated early with Haas getting in the Basham's face and smacking them around. He's all pissed off. Holly lands some offense early, but the Basham's double team and take over. Haas is still aggressive and angry. A lot of back and forth until Danny trips up Haas, and then Carrie comes in with Arthur. And as he tries to scale the ropes, Holly gets a hot tag, runs through both of them. Crowd has flattened out a bit since the opener. Spencer comes out. He's pissed off that his mom's dating Arthur. And then Dawn and Jackie come out too, cause Holly to be distracted and get pinned. Holly gets pissed off that Haas's women issues are screwing them up for weeks, including the match here. Holly tells him to get his head on straight. And then Holly comes out and walks the dog. And then she has issues with Carrie over the Christmas gift that they bought. And then Holly goes off with Doug and Danny. And King of Queens ended there by a boring match, a very paint by numbers.
I think that episode you just described was better than the match.
Yes.
Which seems to be the cookie cutter.
Like the Holly
most...
That's perfect, the Holly connection right there.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Yeah, nothing much. And it really just sets up a thing for later. So we could put this on hold for now and pick it up. But, I mean, the match itself was really nothing. The only purpose it served was to set us up for later in the night.
Yeah, it was a crappy, you know, TV. Probably could have been a TV match. So, all right, next up, our next title match of the evening. The United States Championship is on the line, JR. Now, the last time we were on pay-per-view at Survivor Series, our man Carlito... Has he even mentioned Parma in that song? Is that the song you mentioned, Parma, or no? Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Chicken Parma?
It's the first thing he says.
Oh, I never hear it. Every time you bring it up, it's halfway into the song. I didn't even hear it. Play it again. Play it again, Sam. Okay, that's all I'm
the
here.
First thing in the song.
Okay,
and I've started it at the top every time.
It's almost
zero
like a fade
times
up.
Have it started in the middle, huh?
I think it's a fade up. It's almost like a fade up. You're magical of the fade up.
Who's your Grimwood? Fade that down.
All right. Last time we were on pay per view, JR, back at Survivor Series, at the Survivor Series
in Columbus, Ohio.
In Columbus, Ohio. No, it wasn't. It was Cleveland. Well, it was actually in Drew's backyard. It was at the Warsaw.
The moon was over Palmer that night.
You think the Warsaw had the show there, kind of like Bonehead?
It's like they were drinking Buzz Cola.
Buzz Cola. You know who our U.S. champion was. It has changed since then, hasn't it?
Yeah. On the 11-18 SmackDown, John Cena defeated Carlito in a quick match and regained his U.S. title. After the match, Jesus hit Cena with a chair and then drilled him in the kidneys with his chain. The next week, Jesus told Cena he was just as big a thug as Cena was and then challenged him to a fight in any location. On 12-2, Teddy Long announced a street fight for the pay-per-view. This is also Jesus' final appearance. By the way, real name, Jeffrey Aguilar. Kind of funny for some reason.
Jeffrey Aguilera.
Prior to this match, Jesus tore his groin and herniated two discs at a house show. After this match, he had surgery to repair the injuries but was released in April and never appeared on TV again. He bounced around the indie scene, made one more dirty appearance wrestling Ron Simmons on an episode of Heat in 2007 under his real name. You know, not a great match, but I guess pretty tough guy to go through those injuries of this one.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything earth-shattering.
But, I mean, just to wrestle with those injuries in a match.
Yeah, that's kind of nuts.
Torn groin, I mean, and whatever the hell it was.
Two herniated discs? Yeah. That's not exactly, you know, like a, you know, ingrown toenail. It's pretty, you know, it's stuff that kind of needs to help you move around. So
Cena looking for revenge from the stabbing. He's focused and angry. Tape on the kidneys. Carlito comes out with Jesus and his arms in a sling because he hurt himself too. The story centers around whether or not Cena is fully healed. Carlito spits the apple. Cena ignores it and goes right at Jesus. Jesus uses a kendo stick to go after the kidneys, but Cena just ignores it and wipes out Jesus with the stick across the head. Cena just wrecks Jesus on the floor. Carlito runs away. Cena didn't even take off his shirt for half the match. Jesus is busted open. Cena beats on him into the crowd. Carlito gets involved, and Cena fights them both off. And Cena finishes with an FU in the ring. Carlito tries to hit Cena with the chain, but Cena catches him and smacks him with it. And pretty much a fun extended squash. Jesus got zero offense, but it paid off the story and the attack well. It's time for Cena to move on to some bigger stuff. Good all around, and I thought the crowd was hot for it.
Yeah, Cena's still on the fast track. You know, not a match you were going to expect a lot out of. Carlito was in the sling. Was that injury legit?
I think so. That might be why they took the title off him so quick.
And I also think that's why they put Jesus in this match, because why don't they just give Carlito a rematch?
Right.
You know, so that, yeah. So to Jesus's credit, he was kind of between a rock and a hard place because he was a replacement and really couldn't be replaced. So he wrestled with a, you know, banged up body and, you know, nothing crazy, just under 8 minutes. So they weren't going to go bonkers with it. Cena wins, and I think he's... Do you feel, JR, that he's gotten to the point where, all right, enough's enough now. It's time to middle through the mid-card with this U.S. belt. It's time now to put the gas.
I think they had it planned for, you know, for him to ascend around Mania. So they really just had to get him through the end of the year. So this feud served that purpose. Got him through December, and now they can focus him heading into the Rumble. So I think it was fitting. Like, yeah, I think they knew that he was building momentum, and they knew that he'd be ready. The only thing that surprised me is that knowing where they're headed, that they didn't leave the U.S. title off of him. Like, he didn't really need it heading into Mania. I mean, I guess it plays a role in that feud, kind of, but...
Anyway, yeah.
It just surprised me that they didn't.
I think maybe they weren't sure what they were doing at the Rumble yet.
Yeah, but my point is, they clearly know that he's headed for big things. So...
Right.
He already lost the belt. Why set him up for another loss at some point, if you don't have to? You know what I mean? Why put the belt on him, because he's going to have to lose it during this build-up, when they could have just kept him really strong and not have any losses? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think who else in the mid-card you could have stuck the U.S. belt on.
Just leave it on Carlito.
Hmm. Maybe have Jesus in his place fight somebody else?
No, just have Jesus wrestle here and Carlito, whatever, be injured with the title for a bit. It's been done.
Oh, so just have no title here. Just have Jesus fight Cena.
All right, who gives a shit?
Anyway, and just make revenge for the kidney stabbing and everything. Right. Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
He stabbed him in the kidneys. That's enough. You know, we don't need the
quick healing. That was like Triple H in 2000. Quick healing. Wow, kidney stab. I'll wrestle a week later.
All right, it wasn't magical powers. It was before Survivor Series.
I know, but he even wrestled that Survivor Series.
Well, not really. Remember, he got chased off.
Yeah. Well, he got chased off.
It's only your boy. Stop trying to project it on everyone else.
Yes, only one guy can have magical. Never mind. I'm going to walk into something I don't want to walk into. Anyway, so John Cena.
Go immediately afterwards. After I get stabbed, Chris Colo, I'm immediately ready for go again.
So there you go.
Moon over Parma, bring my love to me tonight.
It's got to be a good bowling alley in Parma.
Oh, I'm
sure. Figure?
I think every house is about. There's probably more bowling alleys than homes, I would think.
You know, pretty good Italian place. Well, definitely a good Polish place. Sausages and such. I'm trying to think. I can't think of it. Never mind. So there you go. John Cena retains his United States Championship, beats Jesus in a little over 8 minutes, wins title, and holds on to the title. All right, next up, this match is probably the reason why we had to have so much fill in the first hour of this show. Part two of the saga that began a couple matches ago with our man, the Bashams, against Haas and...
Before we get to that, we need to talk. So backstage, Haas and Jackie.
Oh yes,
talk.
Yep.
And you know they're trying to show that they're happy, that they're not having issues, and they make out, and it's like oh, way over the top.
Yeah.
It's like legit, like Cinemax. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
like,
just like
we know you're going out. You don't have to. You know, you don't have to have your tongue hit her liver. It's like
intense.
Jesus. We're waiting for the.
Waiting for the Greenwood. Waiting for a little romance to fire up.
Moon over Parma, bring my love to me tonight. Guide her to East Lake underneath your silk.
Yes, I really didn't expect. I can't fit that song into their making out. It just didn't. It's no. It's more like, you know, Rude's smooth operator or something.
Right, I picture more like, it's all about the game, how you play it. All right, so Dawn Marie, Jackie Gaeta. This is Jackie Gaeta's final pay-per-view
thank,
appearance.
Thank
she would
God.
Hang around on TV. You, I thought you were a big Jackie Gaeta guy. What do you mean, thank God?
I'm a big fan of hers, but it was evident that she didn't fit on the show anymore. The fact that I liked her and the fact that she belonged.
Yes.
What?
She would hang around on TV until July when she was released. She would hang around the indie circuit before having a nice little run in TNA through 2006. Mm-hmm. Upon leaving TNA, she retired from the business and runs her nutrition and smoothie shop in Texas. Made a one-time return at WrestleMania 25 in the Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal. Her husband, Charlie, would also be released in July. He hangs around TV, but we'll talk about him much more as we move forward. Dawn Marie's final pay-per-view match as well would have one more appearance in June, but was pretty much done after the show. Dawn went on maternity leave in 2005, eventually released in a big talent purge in July. She would file a lawsuit with WWE eventually, claiming she was released due to her pregnancy. The suit was settled out of court. Would dabble in the indie scene, but is now retired and runs the, depending on who you ask, the charity, the Wrestlers Rescue. So, we'll leave that at that. At 11:25, it was revealed that Dawn Marie had been spreading rumors that she was having an affair with Charlie Haas. Haas denied it, and Jackie believed her fiancé, but the match was announced for 12:02, and Haas was announced as the referee for it. Dawn continued to insist that the rumors were true right up until the start of the match, and then we got the making out. And as we mentioned, Charlie, the ref, sloppy start. Both ladies looking fine. Dawn rolls up and uses the tights. Charlie counts the fall for the win. A real nothing match. Very, very short, thankfully. Yeah. Jackie pissed at Charlie, and Haas admits afterwards that the affair is real. He's banging Dawn. A little bit on the side. Little side piece. Some strange. And he ends the engagement with Jackie. Weird twist. I mean, I guess it was a fine heel turn as Haas is the asshole, but the crowd kind of cheers him. So it's kind of odd. Then he calls Jackie a dead fish in bed, pretends to propose to Dawn, then calls her a slut and leaves and says, basically, screw you both. The whole thing was weird and seemed kind of pointless. I don't get the point of just having Charlie dump both of them. And I don't know. Like, I would have been fine if he just went with Dawn and were two asshole heels. Like, I don't think he needed. It was counterproductive, I guess, is my point, because he was such a misogynistic prick that he ended up winning the fans over. Calling Jackie lame in bed and then making out with Dawn and pretending to propose to her and then screwing her like Tony Bigelow.
But yes.
So anyway, probably a giant waste of time in the end, I guess. A
lot of tongue shoveling in this. Charlie's like, yeah, I'm just going to shove my tongue everywhere. There was no point to this. I love Jackie to death. She was hot, but you could tell that she just had, there wasn't much left for her to do. Shelf life was pretty short, but nothing much more to see here. Kind of a bummer. What are your thoughts, JR, on you figured that when World's Greatest Tag Team split up, that Haas might have gotten the bigger opportunities because he had to show a little more flexibility than Shelton did on Raw. And Jesus, it turned out it was reverse, huh? That Shelton in a log jammed Raw is flourishing.
Yes.
And Haas, where he could have a little more flexibility on SmackDown, went nowhere. Very weird.
No, he went somewhere. Just nowhere good.
Yeah, nowhere good. He just got a lot of shoved a lot of tongue.
It was a real, real odd. And he's a guy that could have been used in a much better spot than teaming with freaking Holly. I don't know. It was just a whole thing is weird. I don't really get what they were going for, and none of it matters anyway. We'll talk about that big purge as we move into 05, but they were clearly on the chopping block as new talent was becoming to be filtered in. I mean, Holly feels like a relic, even though he'll be around for a while longer. I'm surprised he didn't. I mean, I guess Shelton was still getting a pretty good push as the solo guy. Kind of surprised he didn't just try reuniting them a bit, even if they weren't a tag team per se. Just having Haas have his back or whatever.
Right.
But I guess I didn't think highly enough of him to keep it going.
Nope, not at all. So that's it. Dawn Marie wins. No one cares. They both get dumped. Next, JR. We have a little 3-on-1 handicap match action. Maybe that's what Charlie was hoping for. But not with these guys. But we have a big 3-on-1 handicap match. How do we get here? Moon over
Parma, bring my love to me tonight. We haven't even talked about how Drew Carey's the one singing that song. Joy Giovanni was an actress and a model that competed in the Diva Search over the summer. Like many of the eliminated competitors, she was signed to a deal after the search ended. Shortly after she debuted as SmackDown's massage therapist, she began an on-screen romance with The Big Show. I thought it was funny with the Diva Search. They, hired a bunch of them on and then almost acted like they weren't in the Diva Search and gave them all these random jobs and roles. It's like, oh, here's Joy. By the way, she's a masseuse. Okay.
Yes. Forgot she was on Raw like 13 weeks in a row back in the spring. It's like in summer.
Here's Ariana. She's a caterer by trade, and she just happens to be our new waitstaff back at SmackDown.
Yes, she makes chicken parma. Yeah.
Yes. Somewhere Jerry Seinfeld is begging for that massage from George Giovanni.
Yes.
This match was set to wrap up the ongoing Big Show Team Angle War. Over the weeks leading up, Show was always one step ahead of Luther Reigns, who had his high eye on Show's girlfriend, Joy. On 12-9, Team Angle get the final shots in with a 3-on-1 beatdown of Show after his match with Jindrak. And, of course, Big Show gets a little loving of his own from Joy on the way to the ring.
She gave him... they almost acted like they were really going out. That wasn't exactly a show...
I know.
You know, a kayfabe kiss going on there.
I sort of wish you good luck. Be careful. And just makes out with him in the hallway. but, yeah, the Diva Search women, I mean, refreshing the Diva population a bit. That's why, you know, Dawn and Jackie are starting to be filtered out. We have a new crop of women. Long-term payoff for this feud. This has been going on for a while now, since April, like we talked about Survivor Series, really. Show having a nice face run. I thought the fans were into him. It's really a nice sustained run for him now since October. Kind of the big happy-go-lucky big man.
Mm-hmm.
And still this a badass monster, though, like not too goofy. Team Angle has to tag in, so it's not any kind of tornado match. This is 3-on-1 with tags. Jindrak starts. Show works over Jindrak with chops, tosses them around. All three take shots, but Show swats them around the ring. I like the pretty good swarm-style offense by Team Angle, where they kept trying to just pile on them. Jindrak and Luther Reigns put him down with double shoulder block, and then all quick tag to work him over. Angle's calling the shots on the tags and attack from the apron, as well as in the ring. He works the lower back, keeps Big Show on the mat. More tags and basic control until Show makes his comeback by tossing them around with ease. Show keeps pelting them all and hits an F5 on Jindrak for the win. I thought it was a fine handicap match. I thought Show deserved the clean win after where this feud has gone. Nothing stands out, but I thought it was well enough worked and the crowd was into Big Show. And I thought it was a very fitting finish. I'm perfectly fine with how this match went, how the finish was, that Big Show ends it with the win. And as we'll see, they had some interesting things in store for Big Show heading into 05. So I thought it was a necessary win. Do you question at all whether he should have pinned Angle? Do you feel like to bring closure to the feud that was needed, or do you think him just winning the match was enough?
I thought him winning the match was enough. Maybe they wanted to stretch it perhaps to January, maybe to the Rumble. I really, really like this match. I thought Jindrak and Reigns were great as just simple power bullies bruising and, you know, and working Big Show over kind of Angle is, you know, providing, you know, quarterback skills. I really enjoyed it. For a simple 3-on-1 handicap, those guys really stepped to the fore finally. And
the feud overall has been good.
Yeah.
It's a good way to make Show the face, but also make him vulnerable.
Yep.
By having him constantly being triple teamed on. So it's a believable way to make him get worked over. So and this is actually one of my little, I don't want to say guilty pleasure, but, you know, something I'll maybe dabble in as an enjoyable pleasure.
Yep.
More than you would think. The whole feud since October, like we talked about at the time, I liked the head shaving. I liked the Trank dart. I thought the Survivor stuff was good. I thought this match was fine, too. So I think it's been a pretty good feud. On paper, it seems like one maybe that wouldn't have completely worked, but I thought due to the inherent talent and knowledge and know-how of Show and Angle, made it work across the board.
Yep. I enjoyed this match quite a bit. One of my more favorite handicap matches. I was just impressed with Jindrak and Reigns. I think they fit perfectly as the seconds to Kurt, and you know, Kurt had him doing all the work, and they really worked him over with some good heel double teaming. So I enjoyed this match very much. But the Big Show wins.
Well, it's funny too, because at this point, you know, Show was still kind of looked at someone who wasn't maybe completely paying off on his contract still and not having that great run. But he's been pretty hot since he won the title of Survivor Series 02.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he hasn't really slowed down. So he won the belt, had the little run with Heyman. And then all the stuff in 03, what we talked about, was pretty good. His feud with Big Show. I mean, his feud with Brock Lesnar.
Taker.
And then, yeah, the stuff with Taker was pretty good later on. You know, he had the good match at Judgment Day with Big Show, with Brock Lesnar. And then even into the fall, like, he was doing some solid stuff with the U.S. title, had the match with Eddie, you know, put over Cena. You know, not great stuff, but solid, serviceable. And then he he came back pretty, you know, well over here as well as a face. So I think he's definitely his most inspired stretch of his WWF career, you know, outside of maybe his first few months.
Right. I agree. No, he, Again, is he in world title feuds or anything? No, but at this stage, I don't know if they were bothering.
Well, he will be.
Yeah,
soon. So they were clearly establishing him for that.
Yeah, you believe he's been in the league. He's been in the league. He's been in the business only like barely 9 years. It seems like longer, but you know, 9 years. So Big Show wins and sets himself up for something a little bigger down the line as we begin the new year. Next up, JR, another title match. This time the Cruiserweight Championship on the line. Your champion.
The Cruiserweight Champion. Right here.
Right here. The great Spike Dudley with his awesome, you know, goat boy beard and funny brown tights. Sounds like the tights that Sean had at the O2 Elimination Chamber.
Look at the tights on my floor, Chris Golo, after our three-way.
I don't even want to know what the third would be.
Grimwood right up.
How did Spike Dudley's opponent, JR, get this title shot?
Well, on 12-9, Funaki surprisingly won a Cruiserweight Battle Royal to earn the title shot here. Funaki! Show Funaki! Remember him?
SmackDown's number one.
Your pee-pee. You know, kind of going way back, Joe Funaki. Been around for a long, long, long time. Since,
sounds like you just said Joe Funaki.
Joseph Funaki. He's been around since 1998.
Joseph Funaki.
So Cruiserweight title pool getting a little shallow. Funaki announced, you know, funny as an announcer. It was kind of odd to have him back in contention. The Dudleys are out hurt. So Spike's been all alone, getting cocky. Matt worked early with Spike getting a little hesitant despite his arrogance. Funaki gets some quick near falls. Funaki gets a really strong start, playing off his veteran know-how, controlling the action, aggressively punching away. I thought this match would have had more heat behind it if Funaki had been built up as a challenger better. Like, no one, I don't think anyone believed that they had a shot, and no one was super into him because he hadn't done anything. And they hadn't had him get, like, bullied and then fight his way. I don't know, he just didn't do much. He just won a battle royal, and here he is. Funaki makes a comeback, grabs some near falls on a bulldog and a crossbody after Spike had worked the abdominal stretch and worked over the ribs. Crowd starts to get into it a little bit. Both have both thrown good punches throughout, I thought. Some pretty good strikes on both ends. Spike blocks a tornado DDT, but Funaki blocks the Dudley dog and rolls through for the win. The crowd pops a bit. It was a surprising finish with Spike's mega run ending. And I thought it made sense on one hand to end with a major upset. But on the other, I thought he's had such a good reign that it almost deserved a much stronger finish to the feud. I thought Funaki should have been prepared more. So if they still wanted to end it this way and have it go down like this, I thought if they had Funaki set up better, it would have meant more.
I thought the crowd was somewhat into him.
Yeah, but it didn't feel like just another run-of-the-mill challenge, like Nunzio on, you know, a couple of shows ago. Like, it didn't feel like a guy that was actually going to win because there's no story behind it.
Yeah.
Like, if they had built it up even for 3 weeks where, you know, the first time he's interviewing Spike or the Dudleys and they smack the mic out of his hand and, you know, beat him down. Mm-hmm. And then a week later, they come out and they mock. You know, at least do something to build it up and make the fans engaged in Funaki maybe having a chance instead of just making it feel like he was just challenger du jour of the month. Challenger of the day of the month, I guess. You know, I thought that hurt him. And I thought it was, you know, not fitting for the reign to end that way. I thought it deserved a little bit better. I mean, I get the look at it to say, okay, well, having a big upset end it is kind of fun too, but I just thought it could have been a guy that people cared more about. And Funaki could have been that guy, but they didn't give us a reason to yet.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can see that. Of course, most of the Cruiserweight division was in our opener, so it's kind of hard to put them somewhere else.
Right. I'm not saying you couldn't do Funaki. I'm just saying they didn't build it enough. Like, no one... There was no believability that Funaki could win this match, and there was no story to make you want to root for him as the underdog, besides just being Funaki and being a funny announcer.
Mm. Yeah, that's true, too. Maybe they could have just held off and not even had a title match here and just kind of let something build and then just have it on SmackDown. You really didn't even need to have it on the pay-per-view.
Right.
But maybe they thought Spike was done. I mean, obviously, the brothers weren't there.
Right. I mean, there had to be enough little Jew. I don't know. I don't know. It's not like the Cruiserweight title goes anywhere. So it's like they had huge plans for Earl 05 with it, that they had to get it on Funaki. I mean, I don't see what the need was to get it off of Spike other than just to try and do a swerve and surprise everyone by ending his reign. But again, they should have done it with somebody that had more heat or built Funaki up better.
We haven't had any title changes thus far. I mean, we still, of course, have one title left to do. So maybe they just wanted some kind of title change to kind of gack the crowd up, particularly leading into our main event.
And again, I don't disagree with that concept.
Right.
I just disagree with how they went about it.
Okay. Well, Funaki is your new Cruiserweight champion. I always like the white and blue SmackDown tights.
Again, okay, all I'm trying to say is this.
I like to hear Funaki sing that.
I'm sure he
Moon
has.
Moon over Parma.
All right. Let's not go down that way. So Cabinet all preps and wishes JBL good luck backstage. That was a touching little segment.
Oh, you know, kinda, God, it was awesome.
It was like I'll a funeral procession. He's walking through and yes. You know, he's looking like really, really scared. And you know, they're all just wishing him luck and trying to prep him up. And I thought OJ does a nice, Orlando Jordan does a nice little pep talk as well. But I really dug the segment. I thought it added a lot of gravity and a lot of realism to that. This is probably it for JBL. Like, I thought they built it really nicely.
It may be one of my favorite. I think this moment is when I think everybody's switch flipped and they were like, you know what? JBL is an awesome heel champion.
Right.
This segment alone, just the build leading up to this. And I'll get more into it after your comments. But this piece is just incredible.
Well, and we talked about it at Survivor Series, how, you know, he's becoming legitimized through all these wins. And now building this cabinet behind him gives him that one last piece where he's like, all right. Now he's got an army of guys and this woman, and he's, you know, barely hanging on to his belt week after week. He talks a tough game, but now he's got everyone running in. Like, this is what he needed from the start, and now he's finally got it.
Yeah, absolutely. And this whole it's awesome, like so dramatic, and he's so forlorn that, you know, about what's going to happen. But anyway, what we're getting to, of course, is our main event. As John Bradshaw Layfield is defending his WWE Championship against not one, not two, three main event superstars. JR?
We take what we want, and after we take Lex Luger and the Giant, we want the gold, sucker, Hulk Hogan. We coming for you, nigga.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Is that ever going to go? I don't know. Are we due for retirement for that soon, or are we... We don't need Gawker knocking on the door.
They got bigger fish to fry than
yeah,
us.
Yeah.
On 11/18, JBL came out to brag all about the challengers that he had taken out since becoming champion. During his promo, Booker, Eddie Guerrero, and Undertaker all came out to issue challenges. JBL refused to give any of them rematches, and Teddy Long agreed. However, Teddy had something else in mind. He told JBL he would face all three men in a fatal four-way at the pay-per-view. The next week, JBL and Orlando Jordan defeated Guerrero and Booker with an assist from the Bashams. On 12/2, JBL and OJ were forced into a match with The Undertaker. Taker won by DQ, but was laid out by the Cabinet after the match. The next week, Taker got revenge by attacking the Cabinet and wiping them all out. Things got worse for JBL as the night went on, with Teddy informing him that the Cabinet was banned from ringside at the pay-per-view, and Eddie Guerrero destroyed the limo. In the main event that evening, Taker, Guerrero, and Booker defeated JBL, OJ, and the Bashams when Taker finished OJ off with a tombstone. So things not looking good for JBL. The deck has been stacked. It looks like his time is finally up as champion. Well-built main event. All the men had JBL had beaten and feuded with, looking to come back and take him out. JBL's promo in the go-home was excellent as well. Mm-hmm. And then the little spot before this, like we mentioned. JBL's trepidatious but confident as well at the same time. I thought it was good work by him character-wise. Cabinet banned. With Spike losing, one long reign came to an end. It kind of felt like maybe another one was too, and they really seemed to be prepping it that way. And before we get into the match itself, Scott, I want to ask you a question. So normally, this is where the title would probably change to set up Mania, right? We've seen it a bunch of times. We saw it in 2001, saw it in 02, we saw it in 03, where we'd get the road to Mania through this show here. So that, to me, was pointing towards... All right, Spike had his little fun run ended. You know, Cena had his little mid-card run ended. He's getting set up for the main event. Is JBL trending the same way? Is he now being set up to lose here, get the title on whoever's going to be the guy heading to Mania, and go back to where he belongs? I mean, that's what it felt like a little bit. Adding the Cabinet, you know, made you wonder. But did you think that due to the positioning of this match on this card and the way they built it up, that JBL was going to lose? And second question, I remember at the time still not giving up on Eddie Guerrero and still thinking JBL was just a you know, placeholder for him to get the belt back to head into Mania. So part of me thought Eddie was going to win it back here and head into Mania as champion. And the other part of me figured, okay, it's the end of the year. JBL is going to transition the belt to the Mania guy. He had a fun little run here in 04. Did you feel either of those things, or did you think JBL was retaining?
I think JBL is retaining because they were just going way – they were going overboard with the – I think they were going overboard with the
– Right, so they make it too obvious almost.
Too obvious, yeah. Almost like the if JBL loses, he'll leave SmackDown forever. Like, I think they went so overboard on that he's going to lose because he can – you know, three guys want to kill him, and they don't – he doesn't have to get involved in the decision. So, no, I thought the whole time that JBL was going to keep it. I didn't think, but of the three, Eddie was the one choice. That I can agree with you on. I don't think Taker wouldn't have just won a random title in a December pay per view. And
well, Booker to me seemed the least likely.
Yeah,
I would have thought it would be Eddie or there maybe Taker if you had to rank the three. I mean, Booker had the least chance to win. So I thought that was at least maybe one thought to how they could possibly switch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought all the challengers were very over. I like the concept here. We get a quick start with JBL being stalked by Taker and then surrounded. That sets up the story that he's really on an island, gets battered around. Eddie and Booker work together to pick apart both Taker and JBL. We get some near falls from all of them getting broken up by others. Taker works over JBL on the floor. Eddie and Booker follow. Booker gets tossed into the fans, and then Taker blocks a JBL powerbomb on the table with a backdrop. Eddie and Taker was a cool matchup. Very unique and fresh, something we haven't seen before. So it was cool whenever they went at it.
Mm-hmm.
JBL gets a burst, beats on Booker, gets close to winning before Eddie gets involved. Taker gets a nice spine buster on Booker. Looking good in this match, I thought Taker was. Eddie and Booker still helping each other out on and off. Taker chucks Eddie over the top rope with a beel and a nasty bump. JBL grinds Booker with a headlock. And I didn't think that this is the only part of the match I didn't like. Like, I didn't think this match needed a rest spot with all these guys in it. But it seemed to only existed to allow Eddie to go get the ladder, so I kind of let it slide. Eddie paced Taker with the ladder, but Booker catches fire and starts to clean house. Things spill to the floor. JBL powerbombs Booker on the announce table and breaks through it with an elbow. Taker gives JBL a last ride through another announce table. Taker hits a choke slam, but pelts UT. Taker with the belt to block the last ride. Eddie hits two frog splashes on Taker for a near fall. Big pop when Taker sits up after that. Eddie looks frustrated, uses the ladder on Taker, and hits another frog splash off the ladder as the crowd's going crazy. Eddie's slow to cover. JBL yanks the ref out. Eddie hits the Amigos on JBL. Booker makes the save, and the action really starts picking up now. A lot of desperate, close near falls. Booker hits a scissor kick on Taker. But Taker makes a save. Taker hits snake eyes and a boot to Eddie, but Booker makes a save. And great saves by everyone. It makes you wonder how will it ever end if these guys would never get the hell out of the ring because they're constantly coming in and saving everyone. Taker picks up JBL from Tombstone behind a Reich, wipes out Taker from behind. JBL tries to cover everyone but can't get the win. Taker survives Heidenreich, but Heidenreich then drags him outside and chokes him out. JBL steals the win on Booker. And a great victory for him. He took a beating. He survived a very hard test. Probably the most legitimizing win he's had overall. JBL's reign is really getting going now. Between the cabinet and this win here, it was a real fun match, well-timed spots, a frenetic final stretch, and a strong finish to what's been a pretty up-and-down show. I thought it started hot, and the show was finished hot thanks to this match here. I thought it was a really, really good main event.
I did, too. Pleasantly surprised. But just the whole package from the kind of the funeral dirge of JBL, just the emotion. This was a main event built and needed for this show because the undercard was kind of up and down. It had some real stinker spots, a couple of bright spots. But I think this main event really needed to get over. Regardless of how long you thought JBL's reign was going to go on, I think this one really legitimized him, basically because that opening piece where they're all sitting there and he's sitting there staring at the belt, just forlorn, and they're all pumping him up, the Bashams and Amy and Orlando, and it really put over the story.
Him winning here pretty much tells you that they're in it for the long haul. If he gets this is like the final step to me.
Yep.
Like, they haven't usually been changing the belt at the Rumble. Like, usually the guy coming out of the year is going to head to Mania as champion. That's just kind of where they've gone over the last few years. So,
right.
It kind of told you the story. And if you look up and down the SmackDown card, there's only one guy that really stands out that they could be headed towards. So, kind of telegraphed a little bit where they're headed for Mania. But, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you have any other
thoughts? No, but I'm saying, but I agree with you because how to get there, the key thing is, piggybacking your point, how they're going to get there is the mystery, which is good. If there's one or two guys that, there's two guys right now on the SmackDown roster that haven't touched JBL yet. And we're going to cover those guys as we get into 2005. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was fine. I thought it was it was just amazing. I think after the low point of JBL's run was No Mercy after that horrendous last ride match.
Right. Yeah, it seemed like he was
at that moment, you're like, oh God.
Yeah.
Just give it back to Eddie or something.
Yeah, since then he's definitely bounced back nicely.
Yeah. They definitely kind of gave him an opportunity to bail himself out, and he did that. So
right. The Booker feud was pretty good at Survivor Series.
Yep. And then this was awesome.
Yeah.
This was awesome. Depressing in the sense that was this Booker and Taker will just rebound from anything, but were you concerned that they had just given up on Eddie? Kind of like they gave up. I know we keep using this parallel, but they did it at 20. They actually, you know, they handed us this parallel, kind of like Benoit and Raw.
Yeah, I felt better here that he was back in the main event, looked good, hung with Taker, hit the frog splashes.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was presented as a strong part of this match and not just like a fourth guy. So I felt better here. Like it felt like, okay, they still think highly of Eddie Guerrero. They still think he's a high-level player. He's not fighting Luther Reigns anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Luther Reigns.
Yeah, so. I agree. So JBL, shockingly and entertainingly, if that's a word, retains his WWE Championship in a fantastic main event in a fatal four-way. So we had, what, four title matches tonight, right?
Yep.
Four title matches. All champions retain. Well, I'm sorry. Three of the four, except for Spike. Yep. Three of the four. Spike loses to Funaki. And that's why, JR, I think that they did that, because they need at least one. I think they wanted at least one switch to kind of juice the crowd up a little bit. So there you go. There is Armageddon 2004. And, yeah, I watched when it finished today, I'm like, you know what?
It's not that bad.
Not that bad.
No, it really is. Not that bad. It seems like such a dead show because the roster felt so thin throughout most of 2004. And when you look at it on paper, it's kind of like, oh, God. But the opener, I liked a lot as a tag title match. I liked the main event quite a bit. I thought it was a really, really good, solid main event. And there was some stuff to like in the middle. I mean, they had that long lull between the Kurt Invitational through Cena coming out that really almost killed the crowd off with the Kurt, with the Tough Enough thing. And the crowd was a little bit into the Tough Enough thing, but then they were really flat for the Bashman's match. But they came back with Cena. And I thought after the Cena stuff, the show got pretty good again. Cena, the women's match was real quick. Show was a fun match, the Funaki stuff. So I thought they finished strong. So, I mean, not the best pay-per-view ever, but definitely not as boring as I always remembered it being.
Right. No, it definitely had a couple of low spots, but I love the opener. I like the handicap, and I like this match. All of it was very highly entertaining, more than I remember it being. So they did their best to kind of, you know, give us something a little juicy before Christmas, and then we get into the, well, JR, I mean, we're not going to have a very long lull that we annually do between the December pay-per-view and, of course, the Royal Rumble, because we've got something in between.
Yeah, and thus begins the... we started with Taboo Tuesday, but thus begins the bloating of the pay-per-views.
Yes, pretty much through the end of... Yeah, I think it peaks at the end of 06.
Yeah, so and beyond. Yep. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be the week before SummerSlam, so I'm sure we'll cover off on that.
Yep.
We'll be looking at New Year's Revolution 2005, back to the Raw side of the ledger here. So, 2004 in the book, Scott. We got a minute here. What did you think of the pay-per-view? It feels like we started it 6 years ago, but what do you think of the year of pay-per-views here, 2004?
Well, let's see. The four big ones got progressively, I don't say progressively worse, but the Rumble was good. 20 was great. SummerSlam was not great. And Survivor Series was okay. The Raw pay-per-views were, I mean, you have to say Backlash was really good. Vengeance was, Unforgiven,
Bad Blood.
Bad Blood wasn't bad.
It was a shaky mid-year. I mean, yes, Mania was great. The Rumble was very good. But other than that, I mean, I can't say there's been... I mean, there's been stuff we've kind of reconciled by saying, you know, here's a good match here and there.
Right.
Not as bad as you may remember. But there's also nothing that's really stood out as, you know, outside of Backlash. And I'd argue maybe Taboo Tuesday was actually one of the better shows we watched.
Yeah, Taboo Tuesday was pretty good.
I enjoyed that one. You know, the Bash, Judgment Day were pretty rough. No Way Out outside of the main event, kind of rough. You know, highlights here and there, but No Mercy, very rough. Unforgiven was okay. And then, you know, Survivor Series we talked about was fine. And then this. So I think we actually finish okay. And we're in a weird spot. So the year started with such promise, right? We looked at the Benoit reign, the Eddie reign coming. Seemed like they'd be ascending to the top for a while. And they both just end up being very transitional placeholder champions. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at two new faces heading into 05. We'll touch on one next in a couple weeks. But, I mean, who would have thought, you know, would you have thought that Bradshaw would be the SmackDown champion at the beginning of the year? I mean, I don't think if you had 100 guesses on the roster of guys you would have picked, he'd be the guy in your mind, like, in January.
Absolutely not.
It's been a solid enough year. I mean, again, the roster's thinned way out after Mania, and that affected a lot of the shows. They've tried to throw some stuff at the wall. But I think heading into 05, we're in an interesting spot, because 05, I feel like some of the lows are lower, but I think the highs are pretty high. Like, I think there's a lot of good stuff in 05, and I'm curious to see if a lot of it holds up. So
me too.
We'll chronicle as we go. So that is it. We are in the books. Like I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time for New Year's Revolution. We are back next week with – actually, I'll be here later this week, Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, me and good old Will. Then next week, we've got Kevin Kelly's show. We're working on a pretty interesting guest. We're going to see if Kevin can get him in for that show.
Okay.
If he does, I can tell you that the whole show will be that interview. So it will not be anything else.
Wow. Okay.
So we're looking forward to it. New main event next week as well, and then we'll be on the road to SummerSlam soon enough. So a lot of SummerSlam-based material coming up on PlaceNumber.com, as always.
Quite a bit.
Be sure to keep your eyes open for that. Check out all our other work as well. Twitter, PlaceNumber2BNation, Facebook.com/PlaceNumber.com. Again, be sure to check out Exile on Bad Street, The Life and Times of Roddy Piper. Should be up by the time you hear this as well, and if not, it'll be up in a day or so. So with that, he's Scott, I'm Justin, we are out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks' time.
He likes... chicken parm.
I'm going to give you the Dixie downward facing dog, Griscola.
I want parma. Chicken parma.
Moon over Parma, bring my love to me tonight. Guide her to East Lake underneath your silvery light. We met at Ashtabula. She was doing the hula. I handed her my radishes and pledged my love that night. Moon over Parma, won't you bring my love to me? Shine on the freeway and guide her AMC. Get her past those radar Mounties, bring her to Lake County. Moon over Parma tonight. Moon over Parma, shine on I-271. We can't get together in the warm light of the sun. I'm asking you, don't fail, get her safely through Lindale. I can't go to Parma, cause my Edsel will not run. Moon over Parma, where those pink flamingos stand. I need her kisses and the soft touch of her hand. We're going bowling, so don't lose her in Solon. Moon over Parma tonight, I said tonight. Moon over.